Beautiful. What John didn't tell you is the meaning of these Swahili words. Zulu, amandla awethu, which means power to us. And at the early service, you made us yell that, John, and I miss that right now. So when I say power, you say to us. Power.
To us.
Power.
To us.
Power.
To us.
Amen. Good and good. Thanks. A little scary even, right? If you were here last week, you know that this month we are examining the mission of our congregation, which you find right on the front of the order of service, celebrating life, empowering people, caring for one another, helping to build a better world. And our mission is one of these several little nuggets of language that help shape and guide our decisions and give us direction, along with our vision and our covenant, which I noted are in the back of the order of service. And if the sermon gets really boring, feel free to take some time to read them. We've been emphasizing this language throughout congregational life, not just here in worship, but also at our board retreat this year, where we spent a lot of time grounding ourselves in this language. And it was my encouragement to our board that all of our decisions, all of our short-term, medium-term, and long-term goals should be run through these words. There's all kinds of things we can do here, but the things we should be doing here, and we can ask ourselves this question again and again, are the things that help us to celebrate life, empower people, care for one another, build a better world. If it's not one of those things, maybe we can do it somewhere else. Now, you may wonder, where did this language come from? The Rig Veda? The Tao Te Ching? The Bible? And I will say, actually, yes, you will find this wisdom in all of those holy books and any holy book worth its salt. But these precise words do not come from there, no. This is a modern, mostly democratic congregation arising from the mainstream of American Protestantism. So there is, of course, only one language, one way that such language can come to us: from a committee. No tablets, no apparitions, just a bunch of people sitting down and doing the hard work of figuring out what the congregation is about. Now, most mission statements, as you may have encountered, come about when people are beginning something anew or are feeling a little bit lost. And this mission came to us during the time that the congregation was moving into this new building. Susan Bartholomew told me the story of a committee gathering together to chew over again and again how the mission came to be, what the mission would be. Although, as sometimes happens, that committee had finally whittled down to just two people. But by that point, they had distilled the aspirations and the dreams of the many voices that they had already heard. Sometimes it's better to have a smaller committee if you want to actually get the language done. And so finally, Susan and Bruce Kennedy, my predecessor, sitting around a table, came up with this pithy little four-line statement, and the congregation said yes. Now, at the time of the move, this guiding language was particularly needed. My experience is that there is only one way for a community to make it through hard times, and that is to raise its eyes, to broaden the view, to remember the bigger picture, to state again with commitment the noblest of goals. Many organizations have mission statements and guiding language, but a religious community needs language that is rooted in the sacred, language that can change human lives. So last week, we talked about celebrating life in all its fullness, about adopting an attitude of embracing love, of loving the totality of what is. It is not coincidence that it is the first line in our mission. Indeed, it is the first section in our hymnal, the opening section with all the hymns of praise to life and to the divine. It's called the Celebration of Life, where we accept our sufferings and travails as learning experiences, remember that there is always hope for tomorrow, and pledge again to allow beauty and joy into our lives whenever we have the chance. Such a stance, celebrating life in that way, requires us to love the world with an all-embracing love that surely is divine. But having decided to say yes to life and truth and love as we sang, having decided we love all that is our life, that it is good and worth celebrating, what do we do next? That inner shift occurs, and love opens in us, and we want it to grow. And if it's real love, we want it to grow in other people as well. And so we come to the second line of our mission, an action word. First we see differently, and then we act differently. And one way we describe this is to empower people. Now, power, we've talked about before, very simply, is just the ability to act, the ability to do something, though it carries tones of being able to influence others to do or think certain things, the ability to achieve something, to make something happen. Sure, that would be a good power. Maybe that's my superpower. And there are two ways, I think, to think about this empowering of people. The first is inward. And here I actually stumble over the language a little bit. Because the power that is in you, the awakened love, the freedom that is in you, actually can't be given by another. I can't give you the experience of love or of freedom. At best, I can invite you to awaken to it again. You are already free to choose, to love, and to act, and to be a force of good in the world. This is one of the core teachings of Zen, which some of you know I practice, that the Zen teacher has nothing to teach you. They tell you on your first day, I got nothing. Which hasn't stopped generations of, you know, monks from showing up and asking for some kind of help. And I might tell you right now, I can do nothing to awaken you to your true freedom and true love, but I suppose I can invite you to wake up to it. This power is bigger than our little self, as many a person in a 12-step program, for example, has discovered. And it is so powerful that it allows people to survive even the worst of circumstances. I think it's Elie Wiesel, it might be Viktor Frankl, who spoke of his experiences in a Nazi concentration camp. And how did he survive? And it was because even though he was completely powerless in terms of his body and his physical circumstances and even whether he was going to have a next moment of his life or not, he survived because he told himself, I'm free in here. They cannot make me any less of a human being than I will allow them to do, even if the price I pay is my life. And that's always true for all of us. Certainly Nelson Mandela, who most famously said those words that Marianne Williamson gave him, did not forget that fact sitting there in Robben Island all those many, many years. But that's not the only power in the world. There's the power of the physical world. None of us has more love or more freedom than another. We all have, actually, I'd say, a nearly infinite amount of that. But frankly, here in the real world, some of us do have more outer freedom. More money. More access. More guns. It's when we awaken to our own freedom and power, though, and start to recognize it in other people, in each and every other person, that we are then fit to address this, the power of the physical world that can be given and taken away. Mandela was not content to stay in his cell. He was ready to get back out there as soon as the doors were open and fight the fight again. For people, all people, our human family to have power, we need to start with the very basics. Begin working for a world where people have adequate resources, food, shelter, water, a vote. And although we as a community obviously do not have the resources to give as much money or housing or medical attention or whatever it might be to everyone who needs it, we can give what we can, and we do, with our Saturday breakfast, with sharing the basket with other charities, with combining with other organizations, with getting political, with remembering that each and every one of us had darn well better get out and vote this year. When you wake up to your own power, you demand a seat at the table. And it's our job to continue to make sure there are empty chairs at the table for anybody, even the task force-phobic, that might like to have one. And that's why when we have been involved with community organizing, I've been so proud of the congregation, and we will do it again, because it is through this work that we sit down with other people who normally do not have a voice and say, what can we do together? My wife, Rita, works for the Unitarian Universalist Service Committee. Some of you know this is our primary international aid and justice organization. And one of the things that makes it such a beautiful organization, in my opinion, is that unlike so many other aid agencies that come crashing into some situation and throw money around and tell everybody what they're, you know, we're going to do next, the USC goes to the most marginalized people in the areas where we do our work after disasters and so forth, and find the marginalized people and actually sit down first and say, what do you need? Right? By seeing that those people have love and goodness and power in them, no less than we open ourselves to their wisdom. Now, to feel your own power is to be free from fear. Truly the great barrier to our expressing ourselves as the beautiful children of God that we are. We're afraid of shame. We're afraid of what other people will say. We're afraid of failing. Sometimes we're afraid of dying, and we have reason to be when the stakes are high. I recently met a young man named Jesus Guzman, who is a community organizer with the North Bay Organizing Project. He came to this country when he was 1 year old. He is an illegal immigrant who can never leave his house without making sure that every brake light is perfectly right, that every T is crossed and I dotted in terms of his appearance in the world, because it'll take one traffic stop and the land he's known his whole life, off he goes. But from bonding with other people, from finding allies in communities that traditionally have had more power, I myself have sat with Jesus in meetings with county supervisors where he found his voice to say, this is wrong, the way my people are being treated. It's a beautiful thing. Somehow he is no longer afraid. Now, this takes courage, and it takes practice, and that's one reason we form a community to do this. We form a community where people can practice their power. We cultivate lay leaders. We elect folk anew year after year to try new ideas and new visions, to hash things out together. We encourage each other to try and to fail. And to try again, and maybe fail again, but then try again as well. Reminding each other, you're good enough, it's good. Occasionally, we empower others by finally quitting the chairmanship of that committee and letting somebody else have a turn. You know who you are. And most importantly, I think we give our children the tools they need, the awareness of their own love and their free minds, the tools they need to live balanced, happy, world-honoring, love-extending lives, free from superstition, free from hatred, free from barriers. For me, power and freedom are synonymous. Here as well, even I myself am experiencing an ever-unfolding sense of power. I didn't start just when, hey, Chris, come on down and be the minister. It's taken 6 years of your trust and your faith to allow me to continue to find my voice, to be brave enough to lead not just this congregation, but our larger community, our denomination as well. I couldn't be more grateful. And over the next month, and then the next couple of years, we'll have a couple of beautiful, concrete ways to express the empowering of people. On October 28th, we ordain a former president of this congregation, Jamie McReynolds, to the UU ministry. That will be a good day. 4 o'clock, October 28th. And now we have Brian, brave enough to consider the crazy life of ministry. And our job is to grant him the power to do the same things we offer to each other, the power to try, to fail, to try again, to speak truth, to express his freedom and his honest spiritual wisdom, to claim the authority that we, a democratic people, give to our ministers, to those we have chosen from among us to lead. No more inner power than anyone else. We see goodness and love and freedom in others, and we see it in ourselves, and we act accordingly. We wake up to the beauty of life and the beauty of others, and then we share it. That's empowering people. We share it again and again and again until every child, every man and woman, everyone, every transgender person knows their inner beauty, knows that they can make a difference, knows that they are valuable already, knows that they are a child of God. May it be so for all of us.